We've got a good show tonight.
We have a wonderful show.
How's everybody doing tonight?
I thought that I would never want to do this show with you.
Now why?
Because you thought I was
an ass.
Please give a huge welcome for Beth
and Benatar.
Gary Lee Lewis.
Metallica. Thank you so much for watching and good night.
There's a new docuseries on CNN called The Story of Late Night, airing Sundays at 8 Central. It's all about Carson, Leto, Letterman, and beyond, legendary hosts that changed late night television. Through good times and bad, they gained America's trust and kept the country laughing. But it wasn't all laughter all the time. From secret deals to broken promises, some of the most dramatic stories were the ones that didn't play out in front of the camera. Story of Late Night is a six-part docuseries that will take viewers on a journey back in time through present day of late night television's most memorable moments. Jimmy Fallon, Kimmel, Chelsea Handler, Trevor Noah, Conan O'Brien, Seth Meyers, Lorne Michaels, along with countless industry insiders, give firsthand behind-the-scene accounts of an art form that changed the face of television forever. One of the executive producers is Bill Carter, who has written about the television industry for about 40 years. He's also the author of four books about television, including Monday Night Mayhem, about the creation of Monday Night Football, Desperate Networks, about the struggle for the network business to survive at the end and turn of the 21st century, and two books about late night television, The Late Shift, about the competition between Letterman and Leno to succeed Johnny Carson, and The War for Late Night, about NBC's misguided effort to install Conan O'Brien as a Tonight Show host while retaining Jay in a new primetime show. And now to talk about all of this is Bill Carter. Hey there, Bill.
Hey, great to be with you.
You know, this docuseries obviously is not the first time you have brought this subject to the forefront.
No, the two books that I wrote, The Late Shift and The War for Late Night, you know, I didn't know when I started either one of them, all the things that I'd learned.
Right.
And it was a great experience, and I got to know a lot of these very important guys. And so when we decided to do the TV show, I was able to call on, you know, a lot of these guys that are in my Rolodex and get them to say, yeah, they'll sit and talk. And it really wound up being a great process because we have fantastic archival clips, that a lot of stuff I had never seen before. And, you know, basically great cooperation from everybody. So I was really happy with the outcome.
I mean, this genre of television, late night, I mean, it is really one of the most interesting, dramatic, but also entertaining subject lines in television history.
Well, you know, if you think about it, so I wrote these two books, one of which was made into The Late Shift was made into an HBO movie. You know, then you had the Larry Sanders Show, which was an entire show.
I love that show, absolutely.
About late night TV. And it has been exploded. I mean, you can see how much interest there is because, you know, there used to be one show, then there was two, maybe three shows. Now there's like 14 shows,
yeah, right,
which would fall into the category. So I like to say it's a totally unique American institution. There's no other country that does this. Others have tried, but nobody pulls this off the same way for two reasons. One is that nobody has enough guests and celebrities to fill up this many shows. I mean, you can imagine how hard that would be even if you were in a big country like, let's say, Germany. And they sort of did have one show that kind of worked for a while in Germany. But the other thing is, just as a tradition, we just have a tradition. We comment on our political life and everything that's going on with complete freedom. We have complete freedom to do that. Nobody's interfering. No, the government doesn't come down and say, you can't do that. And it's just, we've just, for our entire history, we have celebrated this kind of political satire and commentary. And I think it's really unique to American democracy for that reason.
It is. You know, Carson, we always talk about Johnny Carson as the anchor of all this, but he wasn't the first, but he set a precedent that has kept the format pretty much intact for nearly 60 years.
No question, because Jack Parr, his immediate predecessor, really was a phenomenon and very, very successful. And he did do a monologue, but it was not like focused totally on topical stuff. What Johnny did was he made his monologue about what's going on in the country every night. And he was so good at that. I mean, he really was outstanding at that, that it became something you had to see. I mean, his audience was really gigantic. I mean, even the hour that he was on, it was an enormous audience, double-digit millions a night. And he did that five nights a week. So imagine the number of people who saw his show. Basically, if you grew up in the 60s, 70s or 80s and you were watching TV, you would have seen Johnny Carson. Everybody would have seen him at some point.
Yeah.
He was that dominant.
Well, when he debuted in 62, he was the cool, new, innovative kid on the block. He was the Fallon, or whoever you want to consider, you know, the new king of late night today. He was known, you know, for being just so relaxed and affable and, you know, dapper on stage, you know.
Yes.
You talked about the opening monologue. You know, Steve Allen was the first, an icon himself, that hosted The Tonight Show, and he created something totally different, didn't do a monologue. That was Jack Parr who started that. But, you know, you think about Carson, it was just such a routine. It was the jokes by his, you know, punctuated by his golf swing, and then the monologue, the banter with McMahon, with Doc, and then some skits, characters, yes. celebrity interviews, the biggest movie stars, TV stars, athletes, politicians, singers, comedians, animal acts. It was 30 years of pure excellence.
It was, and you've really sort of zeroed in on how he set the format. He built it like this is now the format, because you know the monologue, which some guys have tried to avoid. Some hosts have tried to not do a monologue, and you tend to see them go back to it because it just makes sense for you to start out with something funny, standing up and talking to your audience. But the idea of then going to the desk and doing a second comedy bit of some kind, a sketch or a character or, you know, some other video thing, which Letterman would do, you always had to have a second comedy thing. So his show became, you know, 20, 30 minutes of comedy at the top of the show before you brought on one of those guests. And then the guests were set up to be, you know, amusing. They would be expected to tell a funny anecdote or whatever. And Carson was exceptional at playing with that and giving them free rein. He wasn't out there to necessarily top them. If he thought of something funny, he would. But he wanted them to score, too.
Yeah, he wanted to let people show.
We had over guests. We had many people who told us how good he was at following what they were doing. There's a great sequence in the doc where he's on with Paul Reiser. Paul Reiser, the stand-up, would do a lot of desk bits with Johnny. And he was doing a bit about how when you get famous, people like to touch you and how it gets to be a little weird how they always touch you. And he's doing a pretty funny bit. But he realizes, he doesn't tell Johnny in advance he's going to do that. And he realizes Johnny, of course, liked to smoke while he was on on the air.
Right, right.
And he would lean back out of camera range when he would puff his cigarette. And he's leaning back out of camera range, and Reiser's like, oh, my gosh, I got to finish the bit by touching Johnny. That's the funny button, you know, the button on it. But he's out of reach. And how am I going to do this? And he's like, it's coming down to the last second. And he can see Carson look at him and realize where he's going, how it's going to be. And he very subtly doesn't just stick his arm out. He kind of brushes his hair and then just puts his arm down right there for him to touch it.
That's awesome.
And he said he didn't know how to do that. He didn't know that was going to happen. He could just sense it. And that's what he was really good at.
That's amazing. Great, great story. And there's a lot of great stories in the story of late night CNN, Sunday nights at 8. You mentioned Letterman, and we all know that Letterman revered Carson. But when we look back at Steve Allen, who was the first Tonight Show host, you know, his innovations, stunts like diving into a pool of Jell-O, you know, I always felt that Letterman, although he revered Johnny, he was most like Steve Allen.
Well, there's an interesting backstory that you were absolutely right. But, you know, Dave's head writer and girlfriend for most of that early period was a woman named Meryl Marco.
Yep.
And Meryl is given huge credit for all of Dave's comic sensibility. And Meryl did not like Johnny. He did not like that style of comedy. She wanted to do other things. And she admired Steve Allen. And she wanted to say, well, let's do things that, like Steve Allen, did stunts. So you jump against a Velcro wall, or you put on a suit of Rice Krispies and jump in a bowl of milk, right, so you could snap, crackle, and pop. You know, that Dave did that stuff because of Meryl, and throw things off buildings and things like that. That's all Steve Allen, and she was much more influenced by that. But obviously, Dave grew up watching Johnny, and his style, his presentation, his smoothness, and his wit, that all comes from Carson.
Absolutely, no question. And when you talk about Letterman and Leno, or really any comedian of the day, I mean, Seinfeld, Roseanne, who made their debuts, Drew Carey on this show, you know, the people that he discovered or really brought to the forefront, one appearance on The Tonight Show, and boom, you had a career.
Exactly. And the pressure you had when you got that, first of all, to get booked, it was, you know, so important to you. And Johnny had this guy named Jim McCauley, who would go around to all the clubs in L.A. And you know, if you were a comic and you knew Jim McCauley was in the club, you started to shake because hey, this is my chance. He might put me on the show. And once you got past him, which was often really hard, then you had the idea of walking out on that Tonight Show for the first time. And it was terrifying. These guys are all professional comics.
Yeah.
They've been all over the country in front of audiences. But to go on the Tonight Show in front of Carson was terrifying. We have all these stories about guys whose mouths dried up, who forgot their jokes in the middle. And George Lopez says his hands froze. He couldn't move his hands in the dressing room. He was so terrified. He said, "I have been incarcerated, and I wasn't as terrified at that as when I walked out in front of Johnny Carson." And that it really says it all, how gigantic it was for a stand-up to have a chance to impress Carson.
And you think about this, after Johnny retired, he did miss the job, you know, and he would write jokes, and he would share them with Peter LaSalle. He was one of his producers, and you know, he encouraged him to submit him to David Letterman, and he did, and Letterman used those jokes on air quite often, and really almost up to, you know, a few months before he passed, he still got that comedy out of him and channeled it through Dave Letterman.
It is interesting because one of the things that has been fairly consistent in the history of late night is when you're a big star in late night, that's it. You don't have another act in you. That's your career.
Yeah.
You don't move on to do something else. And Johnny, of all the people, when he left, he announced he'd be doing other things, and NBC wanted him to do other things and all, and he could still go to Vegas and perform. And he did none of those.
Mm-mm.
He just couldn't do it. It was not the same as doing the Tonight Show. But he missed it so much. He missed that performance so much that he would write out monologue jokes and phone his friend Peter LaSalle, who'd been his producer, and perform them. He would not just read them. He performed the actual monologue on the phone.
Yeah.
And it seems sad in a way, but it also seems like it shows you how much it was his personality to do something like that. And after he died, Dave came out and did a whole monologue and finished and said every one of those jokes was written by Johnny Carson.
Right, right. As Rip Torn said on the Larry Sanders Show, talk show hosts are half man, half desk. Right?
That's right. A dentor instead of a centaur.
That's right. That's right. That's right. We're talking to executive producer, writer, and author Bill Carter. The new highly rated docuseries is The Story of Late Night, Sundays at 8 Central on CNN. And there's more with him next on 720 WGN. Stay player on 720 WGN. We're talking executive producer, writer, and author Bill Carter. The new highly rated docuseries is The Story of Late Night, Sundays at 8 Central on CNN. You know, Letterman, I would say another pioneer taking that late night show and grabbing a whole new younger audience. I mean, he was huge among college students with late night long before The Late Show.
Absolutely. In fact, if you talk to the comics who are in the age group of Conan and Jimmy Kimmel, he was the center of their lives. They would not miss David Letterman. It was so important to them, and he spoke to them in such a direct way. And his comic sensibility was what really set him apart, because he was anarchic. He would bring anarchy to the thing. He would do a show where the entire show was dubbed into British accents, like. And he did a show where he completely rotated the whole show, the camera, so that it went, you know, it was upside down at one point through the show. He did an entire show in a hotel room with Carly Simon. Of course, Carly Simon had famous stage fright, right?
Yeah.
So he did the show from a hotel room in New York, and the closet was the green room.
Oh, I love it.
And he had the other guests in the closet.
Yeah.
I mean, all that is just hit young guys in a way like, wow, this is the kind of humor I love.
Well, and he hit the road a lot too. I mean, he traveled across the country with the show, and you know, he did a famous week here in Chicago that was absolutely still talked about to this day, and that was late 80s, I think.
Yes, and it's very interesting because Dave and Merrill invented those videos where he would go to some store, to somebody's house. Remember the time you went to the girl's house and she wasn't there, and you wound up cutting her grass and sitting on her bed and all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, later when he was on the other show, he did the incredible famous bit where he's at the fast food window where the persons are coming, you know, giving their orders, and it's David Letterman on the other end of the thing. So he pioneered that. But as time went on, he pushed away from that, and he started to use like Rupert G instead of him to go to places. Yep. And Dave, just the thing about Dave and Johnny, which is very interesting, they shared this. They were tremendously confident on the air. You couldn't find someone more confident on the air. And off the air, they were extremely diffident and shy, and they didn't have great social skills. And it's very interesting because Dave would be on with like Regis, and Regis would say, "Dave, you got to come. You got to come to dinner with me, or we got to go to a Broadway show together." And Dave would say, "Regis, I don't do that." And people would laugh, thinking, "Well, of course he does it," but he didn't.
He didn't.
He didn't do that.
You know, Rickles used to talk about that all the time. That Johnny and Dave were very similar in that aspect. Like to get them out of the house, you know, was in the baseball cap and hiding under a napkin, whatever Rickles would say. Well, that's what they
much
were.
Later
that's
on,
they were.
When Tom Brokaw left NBC, they had a big party for him, a going away party for him, and Conan O'Brien went there, and I ran into Conan at the party, and he was like, "You're not going to believe this, Dave is here!" Like, and I'm like, "Well, he came out," and I ran into Dave's wife, who I knew a little bit, and I said, "Gee, I didn't expect to see, I'm a little surprised to see you guys here," and she said, "You're surprised. We haven't been out doing anything in 6 years.
Oh, geez. Oh, man. Wow. Wow. I think everybody was surprised to see him there. The Letterman, battle for the Carson show, Leno and O'Brien, moments in history that was just pure cluster. It was just crap. I don't know how to say
it. Well, I'll tell you something. Here's an interesting thing. Yeah. So I did the late shift, which was the fight of Letterman and Leno to succeed Johnny. And it was spectacular because the story just played in my hands spectacularly because of all the back and forth that happened. So then I was asked to do another book, and I'm like, well, when Conan is taking over, remember they gave Conan a 5-year waiting period to take over the Tonight Show, and then they didn't get clearance from Jay that he would leave either. But so it's coming down to the end, and they announced they're going to put Jay in prime time at 10 o'clock, right? So I'm thinking, okay, maybe there'll be a book in this because who knows whether Jay will work in prime time, and it'll be interesting to see what Conan does with the Tonight Show. So I started that thinking that would be the story, and then it lasts only a few months, and the whole thing blows up again.
Oh,
and
God.
I'm like, well, this just fell into my lap. This is another phenomenal story to try to tell, and fortunately, I had enough cooperation to be able to tell it.
What are some of the most successful evolutions do you think of late night shows since Carson's era and Letterman? Like, what's standing out to you these days?
Well, I have to give Fallon credit for taking the show into a variety show direction. He's an incredibly talented guy, that guy. He can do a ton of things. He's a great sketch performer. He's a great musician. He plays guitar. He sings. He's unbelievable at impressions. So he managed to move it in that direction. Obviously, what Stephen Colbert did with the Colbert Report was extraordinary, amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was doing a character, hosting a show for 9 years.
Yeah, I was going to say,
that was insane. But, of course, Jon Stewart had already planted that flag that we're going to do point-of-view comedy because Johnny would never reveal his point of view. He would skewer whoever was in office, but you didn't know who he would actually vote for. And Jon brought point-of-view and real satire. So that was his innovation. And I think you're seeing people today like Desus and Mero. I don't know if you've seen them.
Mm-hmm.
They're a tremendously charismatic pair of guys from the Bronx, and that's a brand new format for me. And I just think everybody, John Oliver, of course, what he does is incredible once a week, which is like doing investigative comedy. Like, great.
It is.
I think each person is bringing something different, but the format kind of is the same. You may not say to yourself, well, he's not bringing on guests, so it's not exactly the same. But the DNA is the same. The style is the same. The comedy is the same. The challenge to authority, that's all the same. And that's what you recognize. Even when you see a sort of an offbeat show like this new performer, Z-Way, just started a show on Showtime. And you see, she's doing something different, but the DNA is there. And when I interviewed her, she said the same thing. She said, yeah, I'm doing something different, but I know it's a late night show. I know that's what I'm doing.
It's all covered in the story of Late Night on CNN Sundays at 8. Two episodes have aired, Inventing Late Night, The Early Days, Carson, King of Late Night. This Sunday is Eyes on the Throne. You know, who is going to be Johnny's successor? That's this coming Sunday.
I got to tell you, if you really liked my book and you like that whole era, you've got to see the show, because this episode is extraordinarily good. I promise. It's really good.
Then the following week, we got Letterman versus Leno about really what happened after Johnny retired. Late Night makes the news, you know, with Chelsea Handler and Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert. Right. And then you wrap it up with Reinventing Late Night, which is really what we're seeing out there today.
Right, exactly. It's interesting because we had six parts, and I think we could have done at least six more.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we had a lot of material, a lot of really good material that we couldn't use all the material because it was, you know, to me, if I was writing a book, thank goodness I could say, well, this is a funny story, but it doesn't actually go with my narrative. But it's such a funny story, I'm going to tell it anyway.
right.
But well, on TV, we couldn't always do that. So,
well, I have to tell you, love what I've seen thus far. The story of Late Night airs Sunday nights at 8 on CNN. Fascinating conversation, Bill, as always. And thank you for spending some time with us tonight.
Sure, I enjoyed it so much. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. All right, top stories from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming up next on 720 WGN.